The Inklings was made up of professional people as well as Oxford Dons, and this was part of the variety of the group and the diversity of it.
I'm William O'Flaherty. Welcome to All About Jack, a C.S. Lewis podcast, a feature of EssentialCSLewis.com. I'm very pleased to say that Colin Duryea is back on the show today. He is an expert on C.S. Lewis and J.R.R. Tolkien, and that fact is especially important this time around, as he is here to discuss a new book for 2015 about the two of them, along with several associates who gathered together to discuss many things. The book is entitled The Oxford Inklings. Welcome back to All About Jack, Colin.
Well, thanks for having me on your program again, William.
Well, it's always a pleasure to have you. And let's jump in with this question. What type of group was the Oxford Inklings? Is it wrong to just call them a writer's group? And if so, why?
One of the fascinating things about the group that I find fascinating is that they were an informal group of friends. They weren't all Oxford academics. You tend to associate Lewis and Tolkien with the intellectual world of Oxford University and think that all their friends might be such people, but in fact the Inklings was made up of professional people as well as Oxford Dons, and this was part of the variety of the group and the diversity of it. And originally it was drawn from C.S. Lewis's circle of friends, though Tolkien also introduced some people from his friends. Lewis was very much at the centre of it, but again Tolkien was in the core somewhere. All the people in the group enjoyed literature, though not all of them were writers. There's some truth to saying that they were a writers group, but they also, actually it's quite misleading to do that in a sense, because not all of them were writers, and as the group expanded over time, there was less and less people who were writers in the sense of, say, writing fiction, poetry, that kind of thing. People may have written articles for academic journals. And also another reason for it being misleading is that they were also very much a conversational group. And some people who have written on the Inklings have gone so far as to speak as if the group finished around 1949, which was when there was a stop more or less to reading in the group and it became more of a conversation group. But in fact, actually, it lasted until Lewis's death in the early 1960s. So it's part of the whole difficulty of writing about the Inklings is how to describe them. They were a friendship group. Writing was very important to the group. It was a focus of it, but I would call it a literary group, I think.
Very good. Now, you've written more than a few books on Lewis and Tolkien, and while this is not just about them, how is this book similar and how is it different from what you've previously published about both of them?
Well, much of what I've previously written on Lewis and Tolkien has been about them as individual writers and people. I've written a biography of Lewis, as you know, and also one of Tolkien, and many of the other books have featured their writings and their ideas as individuals. But this book is very much focused upon the group, the Inklings, and their contribution to it, and how it was very much important to them to be part of a group as well as to be individuals. There's all kinds of stereotypes about Lewis as being a reclusive bachelor and so on, which are misleading, and also to do with Tolkien, there are stereotypes. But in fact, they both enjoyed the what Lewis called the cut and thrust of group life and sharing and reading their work to their friends. So that's the difference, really. Sometimes I've talked about their friends in my books because that's the important part of bringing out who they were. But this one is very much focused on the group as a group portrait.
Many people skip introductions in books, but I found it interesting how you decided to approach things in your introduction. First, say what you did and then why you started out as you did.
The book itself is intended to be an introductory book to the Inklings for the general reader rather than being geared towards, say, an academic readership. So people, I think, have in their minds that they want an introduction. I added a subtitle to the introduction to make it more interesting, which is called C.S. Lewis and the Dinosaurs. And what I do in the introduction, which is really a first chapter, is to introduce two crisis points. The crises were, both crises occurred in Lewis's life and one of them in Tolkien's life. The first crisis was when he'd been teaching in Oxford for over 30 years, but was still in the post that he started off at. He'd never been promoted particularly to a chair in the university, even though he was one of the most outstanding lecturers and most popular lecturers there. This was an earlier crisis was in the 1930s when Tolkien and Lewis both had very little published in terms of academic work. At that crisis point, they decided that they were going to write popular books for a general readership, which would be time or space stories. And they tossed a coin to see who would write a time story and who would write a space story. So I felt that these two incidents would give a clue as to what their interests were, which also provided a window into what the Inklings were all about. So it was introductory, not in an abstract way, but dropping you straight into two important events in their lives.
Well, now then, in the official first chapter, you lay the groundwork for your topic by actually introducing Charles Williams, a name not always familiar to the casual reader of Lewis and Tolkien. So what did he do, and how important was he to the Inklings?
Well, Charles Williams was very important to the Inklings, but later on in the life of the group, particularly in the years of the Second World War. Now, as this book is a biographical, a group portrait of the Inklings, it takes a biographical approach. And what I'm doing, my strategy in the book, is to introduce the members gradually. Charles Williams was one of the firstborn of the Inklings, and so quite a lot of his life had passed by the time he actually joined the group. But at the same time, he indicates how much it's also an affinity, why he was drawn into the group in the first place. He wrote novels, and he wrote popular theology, and he was fascinated by the idea of romantic love as a key to understanding the relationship between human beings and God. And he had lots of other fascinating ideas as well, which deeply attracted C.S. Lewis in particular. So again, I thought that by introducing one of the firstborn of the Inklings, somebody who had very fascinating ideas that the group found intriguing, it would help in the gradual build-up of the understanding of what the group was all about.
Owen Barfield is another member of this informal group that you introduced subsequently. How did he impact Lewis prior to being involved in the Inklings, and what else can you tell us about him?
Owen Barfield was one of C.S. Lewis's closest friends over a huge period of time, and his importance is that he had a shaping influence on Lewis's view of the imagination. In the many years when Lewis was an atheist, he found it particularly hard to reconcile his rational processes and his imagination. He found them at loggerheads. And Owen Barfield, in fact, had done a great deal of thinking about the place of the imagination in our mental activity and how we get to know things and how we find the truth. And in this matter, he disagreed very much with Lewis. And they met as undergraduates, and they started talking about poetry and their mutual interest in poetry and imagination. And they challenged each other. Barfield particularly challenged Lewis's materialistic view of things and felt that he didn't adequately have a place for how imagination plays a part in knowledge. And at the same time, Barfield's early life is interesting, and I wanted to, as I did with Charles Williams, I wanted to introduce another very key member of the Inklings. And it's extraordinary that although Barfield was so important to the group, he wasn't actually able to attend very often, because by the time group started, he'd gone to live in London to work in his father's law firm. So like Williams, he tends to be neglected by people who talk about the Inklings. Everybody knows Lewis, everybody knows Tolkien. But in fact, Williams and Barfield were extraordinarily interesting and important as people. The major problem I had was that much of what Barfield said was quite esoteric. And it was how to put this over for a general readership. Even when you read academic material on Barfield, it's a bit mind-boggling. So I worked very hard to put his thinking and development in terms of his early life and how he met Lewis as an undergraduate, and how important the 1920s were in their friendship and in shaping Lewis's thought.
While I've led you somewhat along the lines of the chapters, let me have you take a big picture approach. You mentioned it a little bit already, but comment more about, you know, how you did arrange the material. For example, you know, the fifth chapter is the birth of the Inklings, and many people might think, well, if you're going to write about them, you would start, you know, at the beginning and go kind of in a certain sequence, but that's not what you did. Comment some more about how you decided to present the material.
What I've been doing in the book so far up to then is building up a picture of the group through the members rather than trying to do it in the abstract. In the past, I've given talks on the origins of the Inklings, but found that it came across as very dry and abstract, even though I worked very hard to make it accessible and interesting. And I felt that by introducing the members gradually, the book scope only allowed me to introduce some of the most important members, because all in all, there was 20 or so members of the Inklings that were played a part of the group. But it was building up this picture, and by the chapter, The Birth of the Inklings, that kind of ties together what's been happening so far to give a picture of how the group actually started, which is actually quite a matter of discussion because of our lack of documentation. But I think there's enough clues there to build up a picture of how they started, and it had to come at some point, and I felt that this was a good point to do it.
Well, now, regarding the members of the group, again, you were noting that upwards of probably 20 could be considered members, and the book points this out. I don't know if you've mentioned it so far, but there was no official, like, membership or, you know, dues or anything. It was more, you know, informal and stuff. But in terms of the members, maybe pick, you know, two or three others and share some aspects of what they brought to the group.
Well, I haven't mentioned much about C.S. Lewis himself at the moment. He was the kind of person who was the life and soul of the party, and he was very much at the center of the group. But one of the interesting things is that he didn't dominate the group. He didn't put himself forward as the big leader of it. He listened. He encouraged people to read their work, and he commented on their work. And also, I haven't mentioned much about Tolkien. He was much more of an introverted person than Lewis, but once he was in a setting like the pub or when the meetings warmed up in Lewis's college room, say, he would get louder and louder, so he would be brought out of himself. So there's one of the fascinating things about the group, which I hope I've brought out, is the dynamics of it, that they were a very varied bunch of people who interacted with each other and brought out the best in each other. Another member was Hugo Dyson, that I mentioned less briefly because there's a lot less biographical information available about him. But he was a remarkable conversationalist, and he helped that important side of the group to continue. He was a master of wit. He could entertain enormously, and he was much more interested in conversation than in writing, actually, which comes out later in the book when we find him exercising a veto against Tolkien reading yet another chapter from The Lord of the Rings. it's just so fascinating that this group is such a diverse affair. And the tendency, I think, for when you take a scholarly approach to the group is to try and put it into a neat box. But it's almost impossible to do that because these characters kind of climb out of the box. They're all, you know, very much individuals. And on top of that, we've got limited documentation about the what actually was said in the groups and about the people themselves. I mean, it's different with Lewis and Tolkien because we have collections of their letters and writings which give us a clue about the kind of things that they might have said in conversation. And you know, which is a fascinating exercise.
During the research and writing of the Oxford Inklings, you already made reference to, you know, having spoke before at different times, and you're very familiar with them. But I'm wondering if there were any interesting challenges that came about in the process of writing, or maybe facts that you came across that you felt were often neglected that you wanted to be sure to point out in your book.
Well, I mentioned briefly the fact that one of the great challenges in writing it was the lack of documentation. It's really like historical research where you look at lots of letters and documents and interviews which were done with Inklings in later years before sadly they all died off. Clues that you might find in book jackets or all kinds of things, and putting together a picture from this this kaleidoscope of material. And on top of that, when you look at people's letters, often there's ambiguity because you don't have all the context to the letters, and it's very easy to make a mistake. For example, in one of Lewis's letters, he talks about the first weekly meeting of the Inklings. Now, that might sound like that was the very first meeting that the Inklings ever had, but it was referring to almost certainly to that particular term, university term they were in, that it was the first weekly meeting of the term. So if you were, you know, you weren't careful, you could start building all kinds of theories about when the Inklings actually started just on the basis of that. So I think a lot of the difficulty has just been trying to work out as much as possible the chronology of the group and how it went into patterns and how it changed over the years. There's some brilliant work being done on this, for example, Diana Glyer's book, and other people have been working on the Inklings trying to do this. So that's very helpful. Years ago, I did a book with a friend of mine called The Inklings Handbook, and we did it as a reference book because we were still feeling our way with you know, how the group operated, its dynamics, and how it changed over the years. And there wasn't so much research and information available at that time. So we did it that way, and maybe someday I'll do a new edition of that. Sadly, my friend David Porter is no longer with us, but I know that he wouldn't mind me doing a new edition. We were close enough friends for that. And so someday I will rework it in the light of things that I've found out since and so on.
I look forward to that. Yeah, we're going to talk in a second about some past books, but in the time that we're recording this in 2015, you actually have another book scheduled to be released. What's the title, topic, and the target release date?
Well, this is a book which is it's got the title was partly suggested by the publisher, and I thought it was very good. It's called Bedevilled: Lewis Tolkien and the Shadow of Evil. And it's really about devilry and the whole question of good and evil, which was a major preoccupation of the Inklings, particularly in the years of the Second World War. Many of the earliest members had fought in the First World War, and so they were familiar with modern conflict, which is very much machine-centered and very different from the ancient ways of fighting. And they, particularly the more, shall we use the word, evangelistic of the group, like Lewis and Tolkien, saw warfare as a metaphor of a deeper conflict that was going on in the unseen world as well as the material world. And it actually taken me quite a few years to write this book. I started it around 2007, I think. I've had to do a lot of laborious research and work on it. But I remain convinced that it was one of the central themes of the Inklings. And so it follows on nicely from the Oxford Christians. And it's published by InterVarsity Press in Downers Grove. And it's appearing on May the 3rd. So it's quite soon now.
Okay. Then possibly by the time people, if people listen to this after it's been released, that book might be out as well. So be sure to look that up. But we were referencing you mentioned the Inklings Handbook, another book that you had done. I've actually had you on the program. Previously, we discussed the A to Z of C.S. Lewis, and then that biography on Lewis, C.S. Lewis, A Biography of Friendship. People can look in the show notes to get links to those actual interviews. So instead of talking about either of them, maybe pick a couple other titles that haven't been mentioned so All About Jack listeners can look them up. Or if you want to even talk more about that Inklings Handbook, even though it's, I guess, out of print. But share some of your other titles.
I think it's a book that you know about. It's called The C.S. Lewis Chronicles, subtitled The Indispensable Biography of the Creator of Narnia, Full of Little-Known Facts, Events, and Miscellany. It's an unusual book. It's not like a normal biography at all, because it is the chronology of their lives, but done in a way that's that the items that are included are readable. It's a bit like diary entries or a day book, I think you call it in the U.S. But it also includes miscellany. I worked on it at the time of the Schott's Miscellany came out, the famous book, and And it's what it's doing is going through Lewis's life from starting at the beginning through to the end. Normally with biography, you write everything by hindsight. You're looking at all events and their significance in terms of outcomes because you're aware of the larger patterns in the person's life. In the case of a chronological biography, which I think is quite rare, you're doing it day by day, rather like a diary. And so when somebody's writing a diary, they don't know what's going to happen the day after, usually. So it's a very different experience. Lewis's life lends itself very much to miscellany approach because he was such an interesting person. And he was very witty, for example. I put some of his jokes in there. Anyway, that's one book. The other one that I'm sure you mentioned in passing quite a lot, William, is the Tolkien and C.S. Lewis, The Gift of Friendship, which was published in 2003 by Paulus Press. Mm-hmm. And it's still selling. It's been one of the most popular of my books. And I think people are drawn into the whole idea of the friendship between Lewis and Tolkien. Many people didn't at that time realize that they were such close friends and how important they were to each other. And in a way, it carries the seeds of this new book on the Oxford Inklings, where the whole friendship network of Lewis and Tolkien is developed.
Excellent. Yeah, we encourage people to look up both of those titles as well as to browse wherever they buy books, other titles that you have out. Well, now, returning to the latest book, which again is called The Oxford Inklings, what final words do you have to help the listener on the fence maybe about getting a copy?
Well, first of all, it's quite uncomfortable being on the fence, so you'll be able to relieve some of the pain by actually deciding to get the book. It's designed for the general reader rather than the academic, but a reader who's interested in Lewis or in Tolkien or both and may not know so much about the other Inklings or even that this group exists. And behind that is the fact that it's both Lewis and Tolkien are a phenomenon now. A global phenomenon. Even the books that I write about the two writers, about their books, have been translated into many languages, including Japanese and Chinese, mainland Chinese, as well as other forms, and South Korean and Polish and many other languages. And that just indicates to me the fact that Lewis and Tolkien are not just of interest in, say, the US or the UK or other places, but throughout the world in many different cultures. And and to me, the fascination of the Inklings and Tolkien and Lewis is that they were a group that seemed to be in a backwater in the days that they were writing in Oxford. They didn't seem to be in touch with the modern world at all, to their critics particularly. Who wanted to be very modern and progressive. But in fact, it's turned out that what they were discussing in the group and what they were writing about turned out to be very much tied into our contemporary culture, into what people want to read. In fact, in terms of fantasy, Tolkien helped to create the market for fantasy for adults. The time when he started writing The Hobbit and so on, fantasy was regarded as, and fairy tale was regarded as something for children, not for adults. Whereas if you take a larger view of history, the picture is very different. And Lewis and Tolkien knew this, and they wanted to rehabilitate these kind of stories. And they've been remarkably successful in this. So all those things, to me, suggest that it's well worth exploring these fascinating characters. I came across C.S. Lewis when I was in high school, and I started to read his books, and that led me into Tolkien and Charles Williams and other Inklings and all kinds of other writers that they had affinities with that they talked about. So it was almost like giving me a reading list of fascinating books that I wouldn't have otherwise known about. So you might find the same experience getting to know these characters. I think they're well worth spending your time exploring, and maybe my book will be a good introduction to them.
Think it is. I enjoyed myself reading it and do recommend people check out again. It's Colin Duryea, and the book is entitled The Oxford Inklings. Thanks, Colin, for being with me today.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure, William.
Thanks also to you, the listener of the show. Be sure to check the show notes for a link to this book and other titles mentioned by Colin. Also, you will find links to the other two main interviews I did with him back in 2013. You can do this by going to EssentialCSLewis.com. or visit the place where the audio is hosted at allaboutjack.podbean.com. Podbean is spelled P-O-D-B-E-A-N. When you visit either place, you can find previous shows I've done. They include an 8-part series I did last summer on C.S. Lewis versus the New Atheist, and more recent offerings about a magazine called Christian History, whose latest issue is about 7 literary sages. And I also did an interview with Dr. Don King. He edited a book entitled The Collected Poems of C.S. Lewis. If you have any questions or comments, you can send them by email to info@essentialcslewis.com.